Welcome, dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one micro-podcast per day identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Ninjas and Super Spies, the ridiculous RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the previous week's episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you want to follow along at home, we are reading Revised Ninjas and Super Spies, 7th printing, from the year 2000. Today we're discussing page 115 of Ninjas and Super Spies. We are continuing our coverage of silly ninja tricks here in the Arts of Invisibility. And the first thing you're going to notice about this page, if you're following along at home, is a big janky illustration of a ninja in the upper left-hand corner. This is, once again, that like imitative pseudo-Frank Miller style with like the ink splatter on the page that I guess is supposed to convey something, but it's not clear to me what it is. Is someone bleeding? Are we on the beach? Is this a rarely seen reverse shot of Fruit Ninja from the perspective of the fruit? And what we're seeing all over the place is like pulped strawberries? Who the hell knows? All I know is this ninja is weirdly proportioned, weirdly postured, and importantly for our discussion on this page, weirdly dressed. Hold ninja pajamas firmly in mind as we talk about the rest of this page. They are black. They are sashed. As we know, ninja pajamas are footy pajamas, so we have the built-in foot with either one big foot section or like two little toe compartments, the coach section of the foot, and then the big toe all alone in first class. Ninja pajamas are weird clothes, I guess is my point. However, ninjas have ways of getting around their sartorial impediments. To wit, art of disguise, or as I like to think of it, silly walk mastery. And I quote, "The art of disguise trains the character to radically change posture, stance, walk, and expression, all those clues that people usually use for identifying each other. Consider how you usually look at someone. Generally, you don't study them. You simply glance at them. And you don't have to see them from the front. You can spot most people you know just by the way they walk and the way they hold themselves. With the art of disguise, the character has the ability to imitate the movements and postures of many different people." It goes on to give an example of how you can change your gait to get away from some cops. They're chasing you. You switch up the body language, and then they pass you by thinking you're just some old woman. In a large crowd, 50 or more people, with the character able to blend in, this trick works automatically. However, in most circumstances, a roll for success is required. Characters start with 52% and get an extra 3% per level. You get an additional 10% to that if you've got the disguise skill. Incidentally, this won't work if the character is dressed in some outrageous manner. For example, someone in a ninja outfit is still going to look like a ninja no matter what stance they take. However, it takes just a moment, one melee slash 15 seconds, to whip off the hood or change the garments in some other way. Now, it's pretty impressive just what you can get away with in ideal circumstances here, purely through your mastery of silly walks. If I'm not some ostentatious weirdo martial artist, if I'm just like a dude in a gray suit, and I'm walking around in an urban area, I'm living in Portland, so let's say we're in downtown Portland. I am a dude walking around in a gray suit, in downtown Portland. Suddenly I hear gunfire. An assassin is after me. I look across the street. There's a dude with a rifle. He's shooting at me. He wants me dead for my espionage work or whatever. Being in a crowd and being unostentatiously dressed, all I have to do is step into the Starbucks and then right back out the same door doing a silly walk. And the man with the rifle is like, "What? Where did he go? He went in the Starbucks. The man in the gray suit went in the Starbucks, but now I can't see him. Past that man in the gray suit who hops straight up after every step. So now I'm running and hopping, getting away from the assassin. Oh shit, he's got me in the crosshairs again. All I gotta do is pass behind the bus stop, come out the other side. So, shit, I lost him again. That third man in a gray suit doing the keep on trucking walk, he's getting in my way, he's ruining my shot. Silly walks have saved your life. This is a vital skill." But that's in best case scenario. That's in a crowded urban area, and you're dressed to match everybody else. What's more impressive is what you can get away with this ability in a suboptimal scenario. Not in a crowd, dressed like a weirdo. Call to mind the ninja pajamas. I'm a ninja. I'm sneaking into a secure installation. Let's say I'm sneaking into a secure lab out in the middle of nowhere. I'm in my ninja pajamas, walking through the desert, sneaking in among the dunes. I get over the wall. I get into the corridors. But as I'm sneaking down the hall toward my destination, I'm spotted by security. The guard draws his weapon. He blows his whistle. I hear footsteps running from down the corridors. I'm being surrounded. I run around the corner. I'm out of sight for just a moment. There's nowhere to hide, no crowd to blend into, but fortunately, I am a master of silly walks. In 15 seconds, I whip off the hood of my ninja outfit or otherwise alter the ninja outfit significantly enough that when two dozen guards come running around the corner, weapons drawn, looking for the intruder, I just swing my arms out to my side like Vince McMahon coming down the entrance ramp, grin at the guards as I waggle my head from side to side and walk on past. And they're like, "Sorry, sir, we didn't mean to get in your way. I can tell by your jaunty swagger that you're really excited to get where you're going. Let's everybody just make way for the unrecognizable man in the black jumpsuit with the compartmentalized footies. Johnson, you put that weapon down. Don't profile him just because he's in a jumpsuit. We're looking for a man with a hood. And anyway, the intruder was prowling. This man is swaggering. What are you, fucking blind? Stand down." Only later will they discover that Johnson was right, and your clever ruse has allowed you to infiltrate the lab. Once again, the day is saved by silly walks. The ninja's immense power to cloud men's mind by walking like a weirdo is the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 116 of Ninjas and Super Spies. This page introduces us to Atemi, which is basically about pressure points. You do little poke attacks or little grab squeezy squeezy attacks that do special damage to people because of your mastery of their vital points. And I regret to say that I'm going to give you an unrepresentative example of Atemi abilities, which are kind of cool. I'm looking for the dumbest thing on this page, and so the one I've selected is known as Open Hand Atemi, which does not operate by poking your foe in their soft points, but rather by simply clapping your hands. You can clap in four different ways for different effects. You can deafen people, stun people, ruin people's sense of balance, or do a sonic wave attack that does damage direct to hit points. By sending a fatal sonic wave directly into the eardrum, the shin bone of the head, you can make that sonic damage go straight to hit points and kill someone real damn quick, just by repeatedly clapping at them. But in addition to the lethality of the attack, there are other benefits. Quote, "Because of the unexpected nature of the attack, there is always a +4 to strike from the first open hand Atemi attack. There is also no way for the victim to roll with punch, slash fall, slash impact." The second detail is kind of interesting. You can't half the damage in this direct to hit points attack because you can't roll with a sonic wave. Makes a certain degree of sense. Certainly will make combat go a lot faster, so fair enough. The +4 to strike on the first attack, because this is unexpected, is a more complicated matter. First of all, my feeling is if you've run up against somebody in the past who has almost clapped you to death, you have that clap scouted. But according to this book, not so. They're always going to get you with that first clap. Like, oh shit, he always gets me with that clap. And then once you've lost 6 hit points because you always forget how much that fucking clap hurts, then you get your head on straight and you can defend yourself. But how? How do you defend yourself? How do you parry or dodge a clap? And what does that look like? You've got sound waves coming into your eardrums. Do you just like do jazz hands and wave your hands in front of your face to break up the sound waves? Do you just reach up to cover your ears like the Hear No Evil monkey? Or is the sonic wave focused enough that you can dodge? So you've got this weird situation with one guy doing this like series of diving somersaults to get away and another dude just chasing him like... And if Dude A ever zigs when he should have zagged, then he's too close to the clap and he just screams and falls over. I don't think I would know what to do if someone asked me to dive out of the way of a clap. Although I guess I'm not a martial arts master. Maybe that's the sort of thing they would know. Now the alternative, that open hand Atemi is unparryable, undodgeable, and unroll-withable, is basically unthinkable. It means this is a quickly lethal attack that can't be defended against in any way, except for straight up running away. So the most charitable reading is that somehow a true master of the martial art can parry or dodge the sound of a hand clapping. And leaving players in the position of narrating that is the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 117 of Ninjas and Super Spies, and this is our introduction to body hardening exercises. Yes, exercises that make your body hard. Listen, if we get dragged down into every juvenile potential double entendre on this page, we're going to be here a whole lot longer than 5 minutes. So I'm just going to try to pass over them gracefully. And if you want to chuckle at them at home, feel free to pause the podcast and get it out of your system, because I'm leaving for England in, 10 minutes here, and I don't have time for that shit. Body hardening exercises are basically jackass for martial artists. Everything on this page is basically a stupid thing you can do to your body just to say you did it. speaking as we were of adolescence, there is something adolescent about the approach to the human body on this page. An example would be stone ox technique. It is the ultimate body hardening exercise, which you engage in by sitting under waterfalls, taking punches and kicks from students, and chopping outrageous amounts of wood. Essentially, this is the martial arts exercise for douchebags who want to low-key show off their abs. You just sit there under a waterfall, waiting for somebody to walk by, and then when they walk by, you're like, okay, close my eyes, like I'm meditating. And they're like, that waterfall is going to kill you. You're like, what? Oh, no big. I'm doing body hardening exercises. I have to sit under this waterfall lots of hours every day. I actually don't really feel it pounding down on me. My body's too hard at this point. And then later when you're eating at the temple, you're just sauntering up to the other students and being like, excuse me, I'm actually doing stone ox right now. So I wondered if you would want to like, and then you pull up your shirt, punch me in my abs. Just go ahead and like punch me hard and don't worry about hurting me. I've been doing stone ox. My body's really hard. You can punch me as hard as you can in the abs. If you continue to show off your rock hard abs to all these young and impressionable students, they may have to go engage in kangeko, the body hardening exercise that involves taking ice cold showers, which will eventually allow you to endure extreme temperatures. And that's well and good. But what's the point of getting so goddamn hard if you're not going to see some action? If you're ready for your first foray, then may I suggest kanshu, the development of the penetration hand. Yes, the penetration hand. This exercise involves hitting hard objects, plunging your hand into barrels of rice, then sand, then pebbles. This will toughen your hand enormously. This is one you might pick up early in your career as a young martial artist. You know, it's not the sort of thing I do a lot of anymore as a grown man. But man, when you're in your late teens, that penetration hand is key. Of course, once you get into some full contact stuff with a partner, get into some full contact, high stakes stuff, then you might want to go to chagi, which is an exercise to build up your flexibility until you can do the splits. Chagi also gives you a bonus to speed, I guess, because of the leg connection. So it kind of makes you the total package. If you're looking for some fast girls who can get their legs behind their heads, look no further than a martial arts monastery that teaches chagi. Or, you know what, if you don't want to leave the comfort of your own temple, if you're not ready to get into any kind of partner practice, you could just stick around home and learn wrist hardening. These are special exercises that build up the strength of your wrists immensely. This is the kind of perk you get for playing a dedicated martial artist. While the worldly martial artist is out going to rock shows, riding motorcycles, you're at home, alone in your room, working on that wrist strength. The more boring body hardening exercises on this page are Damsum Sing, which is a practice where you and another student repeatedly strike each other at full strength. Qi Gong, which involves hardening your skin against blades and fire. And Shochu Gaiko, where you engage in the extremely safe and wise practice of doing hard training unprotected by clothing under a blistering sun. The moral of the story is if you abuse your body, it will make you stronger. So if that's what you're into, self-abuse away and may your body be ever hard. But I find it to be the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 118 of Ninjas and Super Spies, and this is the beginning of the Qi Mastery section. Qi Mastery is a whole suite of powers that you can get if you have one of the rare martial arts that gives you the ability to focus your Qi into like discrete powers. All characters have Qi, but most characters just let it sit there doing nothing. As we discussed briefly with Tai Chi, some martial arts can weaponize that Qi. It's like you got all this inner balance and enlightenment. Why not put it to use? Focus it into spirit lasers to blast at people. Now, if you could actually throw fireballs around, we'd be in Street Fighter territory, which I think would be a nice neighborhood for ninjas and super spies to visit from time to time. But it doesn't. We don't really do fireballs in ninjas and super spies. We don't do, generally speaking, physical range chi attacks. Instead, chi type characters kind of operate on a different level. They're a little like the wizards in comic books, where oftentimes when superhero teams meet up with teams of superhero villains, the wizards will kind of go off by themselves and have like a wizard duel, like they'll shoot their eldritch blasts at each other. It's like generic magical energy. It's very much like that because there is basically a chi minigame that functions almost like starship combat. It's very strange. This page doesn't get into the discrete chi powers that you can get from martial arts. Instead, it talks about the general things that all chi mastery characters can do with their chi. As long as you have at least one chi power, you get a bunch of basic chi features that allow you to play the chi minigame. The first one is chi awareness, which allows you to sense when there is chi around. You can sense a person with zero chi because they got fucked up in chi combat, or a person with very low chi. You can sense a person with really high chi, a person with any chi skills, anyone with more chi than you, and the presence of negative or positive chi in anyone. So it's sort of like how immortals and Highlander can sense other immortals, but then it's a step up to like a PvP dimension as well, where it's like, okay, first of all, are you enlightened? Secondly, are you Horde or Alliance, so that I know if I should fight you? The next ability is chi relaxation, which allows you to basically keep all your mental issues under control. As long as your chi is high enough, you can resist your addictions, your mental illnesses, etc., etc. This is some touchy stuff, and I'm not sure how much fun it would be to play a character who is, for example, an alcoholic or a schizophrenic who, after getting the shit kicked out of his chi by a snake-style master, ends up falling into addiction and madness and ruining his life. I'm not sure that's the Ninjas and Super Spies campaign I want to play. And then finally, there is defend against chi attacks. So characters with negative chi can shoot out chi blasts, something we'll maybe touch on later. It's described on a later page. But all characters who have mastery of chi know how to engage, at least defensively, in this chi combat. It doesn't take any actions. All you do is decide how much defensive chi you want to send out to create a chi shield. So your chi awareness is pinging. You know that there's chi in the air. You start an active scan. Okay, looking around the room. Bing, 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 negative chi. We've got a chi battle cruiser at 11 o'clock. All right, I'm going to spend 3 points of defensive chi. Chi shield's up. Here he comes. He's on the port side. Now he sends out offensive chi. He's shooting you with 4 points of offensive chi. Each of those, if they penetrate your chi shields, can take out 3d6 points of your positive chi. Now, if it gets you down to 0 positive chi, your chi hole is breached and you're going to start taking negative chi. You may have to eject the chi warp core. Notably, those without chi mastery are totally helpless in chi combat. They can have their chi just blown the hell away, which means that if you're taking a non-chi friend through an area patrolled by negative chi folks, bad news, you're on an escort mission. You're going to have to interpose your own chi shields against the assailants, and hopefully help your friend deliver those much-needed medical supplies to the colonists on Rigel 7. If you screw up and you get filled with negative chi, you're going to need some help. You could go to someone who has chi healing, or chiatsu. You may be able to find a chiatsu specialist in a remote monastery, or at the mall. They can get your chi back in working order, so you can return to your 5-year mission. Or you could go dock at a place of great positive chi, a natural location like a wild forest or a waterfall. Yes, this does mean that if you get filled with negative chi in a battle while you're on a mission, you're going to want to pull out your smartphone and you're going to want to use Google Maps to search for the nearest location of natural beauty, which you will then limp to on impulse power full of negative chi. And then only when you reach there will you sit down for repairs, recharge your power systems, and start the adventure again once you have full power to 4 and aft chi shields. Meanwhile, everyone else in the party is bored as shit, because to them, chi is one number on their character sheet that they never look at and never changes. There's a whole example of play here about how chi combat works, and while it tries to instill a sense of drama, I can't shake the feeling that chi combat is going to be the triple triad of your Ninjas and Super Spies campaign. In a game chock full of separate and detailed subsystems that could interact interestingly with the central philosophical concept of chi, treating chi combat like a protracted wizard duel that most characters don't get to participate in is a pretty weak idea and is the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 119 of Ninjas and Super Spies. We're on to the positive chi skills. These are specific chi applications that your chi master can use. One of them is chiatsu, which allows you to heal chi or hit points in SDC if a night is too long to wait to recover to full health from all the abuse you've taken over the course of the day. Then there's dragon chi, which allows you to draw chi from people and places around you. Once again, waterfalls are high on the list of places you want to fight if you're a chi master. Every turn you can get like 9 points of chi from a waterfall, beachfront, or volcano, which is actually a nice little genre touch that if you are an enlightened soul, you really want to beat people up in cool surroundings, and it just makes you a lot more effective. Dragon chi is a cool and genre-savvy idea that only becomes deadly when combined with the third chi power on this page, and the dumbest thing on this page, body chi, or kokyu. Quote, this is the ability to focus chi to directly influence the character's body. Attributes. Chi is directed into either ME, MA, PS, PP, or speed. Each point of chi adds 5 points directly to the attribute for one full melee round. You can add as much to your attributes as you want with chi. You can add to multiple attributes at the same time with chi. And with dragon chi, you can get a shitload of chi, which means you can get a shitload of attribute points. If you are a chi master, let's say a master of Aikido, and some poor asshole agrees to duel you at a waterfall, you can add 45 points to your attributes every round without spending a point of your own chi. There's nothing waterfalls can't do. Have you ever wondered what it's like to be able to run 40 miles an hour? You can do it at a waterfall. How about lifting 3,000 pounds? Just go to a waterfall. I mean, Aikido is a pacifistic art, but you're not going to need combat moves when you can simply drop a truck on your foe because he didn't know that you go fucking Super Saiyan in the presence of poignant nature scenes. You can add these points to your mental affinity too, which means you can give yourself a 98% chance to frighten or charm anyone. Have you ever wanted to seduce somebody by taking her to a waterfall, just like Robin Hood did in the Disney movie Robin Hood, but it doesn't work for you because you're not a sexy fox, you're just a hideous human being? Well, now you can, because if you can get a lady to come with you to the waterfall, you can use Dragon Chi to pump your MA up. Now you've got a 98% chance of charming the pants off of that sexy fox lady, I mean human lady. There are a variety of tricks to pump up the Chi that's available to you from your surroundings, and body chi just allows you to buy attributes at too good an exchange rate. In the hands of a casual player who doesn't understand how chi works, this might be fine. But in the hands of a real power gamer, like particularly in a Rifts environment, which, you know, as we've talked about, all Palladium campaigns converge upon Rifts, this is going to get nuts. Forget invisible chi lasers. You want to be able to hurl boulders and outrun automobiles. And the fact that this game encourages you to do that, albeit only in picturesque locations, is the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 120 of Ninjas and Super Spies, and we are now entering the realm of dark chi, negative chi. Evil chi? Well, yes, pretty much. Negative chi allows you to do all the cool things people want to do with their enlightenment, which is to say, kill people. Specifically, we're going to discuss one chi power that is meant to make you look really cool and really won't. It's called Fist Gesture. It's totally not based on the dark side in the Force, but here's what it does. It works like a long-distance death blow, and that's capitalized. Death blow is a thing in Palladium games. It's a blast of negative chi that you send at your foe. You reach out toward your foe. You open your hand, and then you close your hand dramatically. Imagine a man dressed all in black holding out his fist in a menacing gesture that kills his foe. Any man in black making a menacing magical gesture that you can imagine. Whatever. But that's what you're doing. You're holding out the fist and you're closing it and your foe's heart stops. They are death blowed. To make this work, of course, what you have to do is call your shot, spend all your actions and 8 points of chi on this menacing fist gesture, and then roll a d20. If you roll a natural 20, then it works. Otherwise, they just take 1d6 damage, which is like a club hitting someone, and their heart doesn't stop or anything. Now, I understand the value of a dramatic gesture when you are an arch-villain, but in the immortal words of George Costanza, that is a pretty big matzo ball hanging out there when you reach out to your foe with a dramatic gesture and clench your fist, and all they feel is like a light pressure on their shoulder. You're gonna feel like a real goof. You're going to be suddenly very conscious of the fact that you're standing in the middle of a room wearing a cape being ineffectual, and the players are not going to be impressed with this big bad villain. This is an opportunity for us to talk about the death blow in general. This is a ranged death blow, a really shitty ranged death blow, but the regular death blow also is not good. The problem with death blows and knockouts in Palladium games is that you have to call your shot. So instead of, like in other games, you know, when you roll a natural 20, then it's like a happy surprise and you do a ton of damage and you probably, you know, behead a goblin or whatever. And it comes when you didn't necessarily need it. It's just like, you know, I'm fighting goblins. And then this turn, ooh, I got a 20. I really nailed that goblin. I cut him right in half. It's like finding a little Easter egg. It's like finding $20 you didn't expect in your pocket. Hooray, a dead goblin. In Palladium, this only happens when you need it and want it and call it. you are in a situation where you want to hit a big, dramatic, decisive blow. In fact, you must want it pretty goddamn bad because you're sacrificing a turn betting that you're going to roll a natural 20. And if you don't, nothing will happen. And then, of course, you're probably not going to roll a natural 20 and the whole thing is going to fizzle. The only way I can imagine this working and maintaining your mystique as an evil chi user is to leave some room for deniability. Like, maybe your foe is tied up and you're standing across the room and you close your fist dramatically and nothing happens, but you can just play it off like you are illustrating your point. Like, that's like a little oratory technique that you're using. Say something cool while you're doing it and be like, "And now, using the power of my mind alone, I shall crush your heart." And then if their heart doesn't crush, then they think you are just like miming crushing a heart. And then you can, you know, try again next turn. So to use this power is sort of to ask for indignity. You're going to make a big sweeping gesture that 19 times out of 20 is not going to work. It's going to make you look like a fool. But there is one more indignity awaiting you, and it's probably the dumbest thing on this page. So the mechanism of death blow, including this ranged death blow that you can do with your dark chi, is that you stop your opponent's heart, right? A death blow is a punch that hits in the chest and your opponent's heart stops. You therefore inflict double damage direct to hit points. Now that's serious business. Okay, we've talked about damage direct to hit points. It's very effective, but it's not the end of the world. Double damage direct to hit points from a character with good damage will probably kill like a cabbie. It will probably kill like a random dude on the street who you want to kill to look cool. It will not kill an experienced martial arts foe in this game. So what's going to happen is you're going to reach out toward your hated rival and clench your fist dramatically. And then, you know, close your eyes and look the other way and roll your d20. And then it's like, oh shit, I actually did it this time. I actually rolled a 20. All those times that I tried to kill my rival and nothing happened and he just laughed at me, it finally paid off. This guy can eat it. I stop his heart. And then your rival is like, "Ah, my heart. It stopped. But I'm good. I'm good. Let's do it. Let's mix it up. Cause I've still got like 20 hit points left." You're going to get your ass beat because you spent all your actions this melee on that one attack. Your foe, you can't defend yourself anymore. You can't dodge or anything. And so you're going to be murdered by a man with his heart not beating. You're going to hit someone with a death blow and then he's going to run over and beat your ass like a zombie. The dramatic chi fist gesture is an all-in attack in which you lethally mime crushing your opponent's entire life in your hand, and it is virtually guaranteed not to work. And the next thing that's going to happen is that the foe whose heart you just tried to stop is going to punch you in the face. This will not be good for your supervillain image, and it is the dumbest thing on this page. Join me next time for a few final details on dark, evil, negative chi on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. New episodes drop every day, except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. MDC, Palladium Books, Ninjas and Super Spies, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Ciambietta. This slightly annoying theme song is Cartoon Battle by Kevin MacLeod, whose work you can find at incompetech.com. The gong sound effect was recorded by Daniel Simon. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.